Good morning, witches. This is the Witch Daily Show, coming to you from New Orleans, with host Tanya Brown. Our episodes span about 20 minutes long to give you just a little pop of magic. So, tune in, take a deep breath, and enjoy. Good morning. It is February 27th, 2023. It is Monday. I am Tanya, and this is the Witch Daily Show. Today's episode is brought to you by Grow Your Own Optimist by Olive Blake. So let's get your day going with a little magic. And definitely stick around to the end. We have a giveaway announcement as well as an update on the New Orleans Witch Academy getaway thing. I'm so excited. Anyways, our quote of the day is, "The price we pay for being ourselves is worth it," by Eartha Kitt. So we are wrapping up our month of soup, which now in retrospect, I think a month of soup was maybe a lot. But, you know, here we are. So one thing we want to talk about is black pepper. Why? Because black pepper's in everything, including soup. So we're talking about black pepper. This comes to us from outofstress.com. 7 spiritual and magical uses of black pepper: protection, purification, and more. So black pepper is one of the oldest spices known to mankind, with a history going back at least 5,000 years. Since ancient times, this spice has been used for its culinary and medicinal as well as spiritual magical properties. In India, for instance, pepper was and still is used for protection and in rituals involving removal of evil eye and negative energy. Similarly, in many cultures across the world, black peppers were associated with gods and goddesses of protection, war, and victory. So let's talk about magical uses. So black pepper can be used for cleansing and purification. You can add whole peppercorns to water, pour the mixture into a spray bottle, and spray it in areas that need cleansing. You can carry peppercorns to ward off jealousy. You can sleep with peppercorns for protection throughout the night. You can use black pepper for motivation and focus. You can also use it to enhance protection jars and spells. Yeah, so pepper, I think we could easily put into the category of like a hot spice. And anything that is quote-unquote hot adds fuel, right? It pushes, it motivates, it quickens, right? So that totally makes sense. Add peppercorns to foods for breaking hexes and the evil eye. Oh, so honestly, I put pepper in everything because just like salt, I put pepper on absolutely everything. So I guess all of my food breaks the evil eye. Nice. Good for me. You can also use pepper to create protective black salt. So black pepper makes for an important ingredient in preparation of black salt. Black salt has powerful protection properties and can be used in a variety of spell and ritual works. You can easily make black salt using rock salt, black pepper powder, crushed charcoal, and powdered cinnamon. Be sure to replace the mixture regularly. A friend of mine, who we've actually had on the podcast a few times, Michelle, makes black salt. And hers has charcoal salt, and it has, I'm pretty sure, lavender. Like, it's really lovely. All right, witches, we are jumping into some headlines. So this one I was really excited to share because it is my absolute favorite Mardi Gras tradition. As you know, last week we had Mardi Gras, and it really does just, I cannot explain it. You lose time. You lose a week of your life, and that's even if you're not participating. Like, even if you're not participating, you just lose time. It is the weirdest thing. So I definitely came back being like, oh gosh, I have all these emails I need to get to. I have orders that have been waiting for a while, so I need to get those done. Like, ooh, it was wild. But if you ordered from me and it took like a week or two, I will be putting in some Mardi Gras throws into your package for you. Or honestly, you know what, for funsies? If anyone orders from anything from Sip a Spell or Witch Way within the next 2 weeks, just put a note that you want a Mardi Gras throw and I'll throw a little something there for you. But anyways, I love Mardi Gras, and my first ever introduction to it, like my first ever Mardi Gras thing, was the North Side Skull and Bone Gang, which apparently was like not a secret, but like not a well-known thing, even though it's super cool. Like, I've had neighbors who lived here for over a decade who are just like, yeah, oh my gosh, you won't believe what I saw for the first time yesterday. And I'm just thinking like, oh, I've been seeing that since day one. And for me, it set the bar. It set the bar for Mardi Gras to be something really spiritual and special. So when I went from that to maybe some of the more touristy aspects, I definitely don't get a lot of enjoyment from the touristy things, like the really big float parades and stuff, only because my bar was set so high with the North Side Skull and Bone Gang. So let me tell you what it's about. So this is from MardiGrasTraditions.com. So basically, to the uninitiated, the skeleton masking North Side Skull and Bone Gang, representing, on the most basic level, death, might seem out of place on Mardi Gras. So they're not trying to be the prettiest anything or bond with revelers intent on indulging giddy fantasies. They come out before dawn in the Treme neighborhood and keep it on the real. So again, it's not glitter and plastic and, you know, it's in flashing lights. It's people dressed as skeletons. So they're menacing. They have oversized skull heads crafted from bale wire and paper mache, gloved hands gripping massive meat bones, intimidating spears made with antelope horns, and aprons scrawled with skulls, bones, and their signature catchphrase, "You next." There's primal drumming and chanting, along with booming songs from the big chief Bruce Barnes, who is known to adorn himself with huge alligator teeth and have the horns of an African water buffalo. So back in the day, Mardi Gras skeletons would wake up the Treme and send children scrambling in fear, warning them of scary comeuppance if they didn't stay in school and out of trouble. Their costumes were simple but effective. Long johns dyed black with bones painted on them did the trick. The skull heads were sculpted with wire and covered in cheesecloth, then painted with multiple coats of white enamel. It was an inexpensive way for black men to participate in carnival. At the time when people of, basically when not white people, like, weren't really welcome in the official celebration, which is a thing. Like, I love Mardi Gras, but there is an aspect to it that is really just like a social ladder where it's just like the richest white people doing like maybe not the coolest things. So this was kind of a way for, like, you know, not rich white people to participate. So the essential accessory came fresh from the meat market. Everybody had a bone. Alfred Morris, who preceded Sun Pai as chief, explained in a 2003 documentary, All on a Mardi Gras Day, which explored African-American carnival traditions. Quote, "And the bloodier it was, the more meat it had on it, the better it looked," unquote. Under Sun Pai, the North Side Skull and Bone Gang has broadened the Scared Straight program to all age groups. The chief's ominous raps and pronouncements about taking stock of one's life before it's too late, having a way of cutting to the bone. So here is what they say. "On Mardi Gras morning, I hear the tambourine ring. You gotta wake up one morning, find your own self dead. Oh, the next thing you know, boy, they're tossing dirt on your head." After each line, the crowd chants, "Too late." Ashes to ashes and dust to dust. You keep popping them pills. You gotta come see us. Sun Pai channels Gade, the rambunctious guardian, or Gade, the rambunctious guardian of the graveyard and the spiritual pantheon of voodoo, which came to New Orleans mostly by way of Haiti. It continues, "I don't wear no feathers. I ain't got no crown. I'm the big chief from the hole in the ground. He's mysterious and stealthy. The bone men evoke the literal meaning of carnival, farewell to the flesh, and serve as a reminder that carnival, like death, is the great equalizer. Anyone can join in the fun and be king or queen for a day, but none in the end can escape the grasping reaper. It all makes sense in a city where celebration and death, as exemplified by the jazz funeral tradition, has long been closely connected. It's just really interesting. So I really just wanted to share with you. There is a group of voodoo priests who do a ritual beforehand. I will say I didn't go this year because I got sunburned and like that. It's a whole thing, but I got sunburned. I couldn't go anywhere. But I've been doing this pretty much every year since I moved here. And I will say from what I've heard, and I did see this year and last year, like words gotten out, which is wonderful. Like it's wonderful words gotten out because they do collect donations for, I think the, African Museum. They collect donations. So it's wonderful. People are going it and seeing it and enjoying it. However, the past 2 years, it has been like elbow, shoulder to shoulder, elbow to elbow, where like people not in their thing are getting in their way. They're having to push people out of the way. Like, it's just not. It's just so popular now. So with popularity comes people who are being disrespectful, who are getting in the way, who are not behaving correctly. And it's losing a little bit of its spark for me, but it's still to this day, the best part of Mardi Gras for me and it has wonderful memories and will always be the first Mardi Gras experience I've ever had. And I feel very blessed. Okay, witches, we are throwing this over to our moon correspondent, and after this break, we will talk more.
Hello to all of my astro friends. This is Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, coming at you with your daily moon mantra for Monday, February 27th. The first quarter moon calls everyone it knows in Gemini today. Here, the moon squares the sun and conjuncts Mars. We're ready to take action, but we have to be careful that this action isn't against our own self-interest. The square to the sun puts us at odds with ourselves, and Mars isn't one to let that get in the way. However, if we don't consider how our actions may hinder our forward motion, we may end up harming our future selves more than helping. So think twice before you shift into action, and make sure each step takes you closer to yourself. Your daily moon mantra is, thinking before acting is wisdom. Acting before thinking is regret. This has been your daily moon mantra with Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, signing off and reminding you that you are in charge of your own destiny.
From the pages of Which Way magazine comes a new collection of stories by longtime fiction contributor Olivie Blake called Grow Your Own Optimist. Featuring a never-before-seen short story, Grow Your Own Optimist is often romantic, occasionally satirical, and always unexpected. These surprising tales of demons, devil's advocates, dystopia, and dating remind us that there is magic to be found in the dark places. Olivie Blake is a New York Times bestselling author of The Atlas Six and several other books, including the Which Way anthology, The Answer You Are Looking For Is Yes, and the novella La Petite Mort. She lives in Los Angeles with her husband, Goblin Prince Toddler, and Rescue Pitbull. Find the new anthology series, Grow Your Own Optimist, by Olivie Blake, wherever books are sold.
So we are back. So we are talking today, you know, we're talking about Mardi Gras and the Skull and Bone Gang, which is all about death and living one's life. And I thought it would be correct in tone to talk today about the European werewolf trials. So we know about the witch trials, but do you know about the werewolf trials? So this actually comes from the February issue of Which Way magazine of this year and written by Michelle Lalumiere. La Lumiere. So let's talk about werewolves. Why not? We're talking about skeleton man, skeleton men. We can talk about werewolves. Okay, so before Tituba was forced to confess, or Alzie Young was put to the gallows in Hartford, Connecticut, another type of trial was happening across the Atlantic in Europe, Germany and France, to be exact. We're having a different kind of witch hunt. There was a hunt for werewolves sweeping parts of Europe. Werewolves, or lycanthropy, transforming into a werewolf, was first recorded in 1521. She writes, here in France, Michael Verdun was accused of being a werewolf after wolves got into town and killed a bunch of sheep. Oh, we know where this is going. Anytime a bunch of sheep die, like, oof, we're about to enter a hysteria. After being interrogated, or in other words, forced to confess, Verdun admitted to being a werewolf. If this sounds familiar, you would be right. At the same time around Europe, innocent people were first forced into admitting that they were witches. In the 15th and 1600s, about 80,000 accused were put to death of being a witch. Out of 80,000, 64,000 of the executed were women. During this time, the church and therefore the government was concerned with people making pacts with the devil. That was like a really big concern. So we know that not all believed in the devil, as that's a Christian construct, and many were still pagan in Europe. But we know that many women and men were accused of being either a werewolf or wholly innocent witches, but they were easy scapegoats for the church's fear of paganism. So it is worth noting as well that at the time there was like a little ice age happening. So Europe was unseasonably cold from the 14th to 19th century. Before I continue, I can tell you exactly what's going to happen. It's going to be too cold, crops aren't going to grow, people are mad, right? So let's continue. Unfortunately, with the lack of understanding, the blame fell on the poor, or anyone low on the social ladder. Cue the witch trials. So now, of course, when you have these types of trials, you also need judges. And the judges that they had seven, which included John Hathorne and Jonathan Corwin. So the French had their werewolf judge, Henry Bogart of St. Claude. Both sets of judges were nothing but harsh and cruel. How cruel, you ask? Children were not exempt from the wrath of the judges. In Salem, Dorothy Good, who was just 4 years of age, was sent to jail. She was interrogated for 2 weeks before she finally did what she was needed, and she lied. She lied and broke down in hopes that they would set her free so she could finally eat. Little Dorothy was subjected to jail from March to December of 1692. It was only then that her father had finally was able to save enough money to bail her out. So not only did you need money for bail, but they were also charging you room and board to be in jail. So Judge Henry was no better. He had a child executed for pretending to be a wolf and running around on all fours. There was no mercy, not even for children. Okay, it's not funny, but this is always when like I hear John Mulaney in my head talk about that like children didn't have rights until like the 80s. All the judges did have a similar reason as to why they were executing people. You guessed it, the devil, right? It's always the devil. Both witch and werewolf trials were at the time when Christians still believed in witchcraft. Both the werewolf and the European witch trials ran quite subsequently to each other. So both began in the 16th century and subsided dramatically by the 18th century. This timeline follows suit with the American witch trials, which, while sporadic in time, ran from 1647 to about 1878. Most of the accused, whether witches or werewolves, had something massive in common. They were the underdogs, no pun intended. Many of the suspected witchcraft in America or Europe were mostly women and not exactly high on the social scale. So the werewolf trials were more than just the poor being accused of turning into wolves. There was something far more sinister at play. And what's right wild is when you think of werewolf trials, you think, oh, that's like crazy or out there. But they, like, the witch trials, they thought women were turning into cats. So, like, this isn't a far jump. Like, they already thought women could turn into cats. Why not men turn into dogs, you know? Or people turn into dogs. So there was a lot going on, a lot more sinister stuff at play. For instance, Peter Stubb was accused of being a werewolf in 1589. Stubb confessed to killing and eating 14 children and 2 pregnant women. One of these children was his flesh and blood son. Stubb insisted that the devil gave him a belt that would transform him into a bloodthirsty wolf, one that would go on to kill so many innocent young children. So was Stubb just a serial killer looking for a way to put the responsibility of such a heinous crime on something supernatural? Maybe. They still do it today. Like, a lot of serial killers will just say that, like, the devil made them do it. So, like, it tracks. Or, you know, like, mental health, you know, issues. So in 1597, James VI of Scotland published his work, Demonology, which states that lycanthropy, when one turns into a vampire, was because of melancholy, or as we know it today, depression. Stubb seems to have suffered from some illness. He did eat children and had an incestuous relationship with his daughter. Witches around the world were a little bit more straightforward. You see, most of them were women, a lot were widowed and over the age of 40. For instance, in Salem, the accused were mainly women who stood out for whatever reason. Both the werewolf and witch trials, the accused were given a chance to admit guilt. Many were given a chance to save their own lives with an admission of guilt, and people from each set of the trials were saved. There were the accused, of course, that refused to speak or admit guilt. Why admit guilt, they thought, if they were God-fearing, devout Christians or Quakers or Puritans? People kind of forget that, like, especially in, like, Salem and stuff, like, these were really, really devout, God-fearing people. They probably would have rather have faced death than to admit to something so heinous, right? So people kind of forget, like, that. People forget the level of God devout a lot of the killed were. So there was a time when society stopped believing so much in witchcraft and even started apologizing for the wrongdoings that take place. We talk about that all the time, headlines where, like, Scotland apologizes or whatever apologizes. The last accused witch of Salem, Elizabeth Johnson Jr., was exonerated in 2022. I think we covered that. While other prosecuted were already cleared in previous years. Unfortunately, I could not find any record of the countless people who were wrongfully convicted and killed for presumably being a werewolf. No matter if you were persecuted for being a werewolf or a witch in the 15th or 16th centuries, if your social status was less than admirable, the government and church would probably find a way to blame you for something. Their werewolf and witch trials may be behind us. However, there will always be people that try to blame others for the unknown. So I really thought this was a great article and just really wanted to share it. All right, witches, we are wrapping up this episode of the Witch Daily Show. I do want to give some shout-outs. First to listener Candace Cabell. Candace, you glorious, loyal barn owl. Stephanie Pinion. Stephanie, you hospitable, cunning unicorn nurse. Lillian, you esoteric, cunning sun goddess. And Elizabeth, or Beth, you tenacious, starry-eyed tiger cub. Thank you for so much for being Patreon supporters. I really, really appreciate it. And before we leave, we do have a card pull today. Our card today is Truth from the Metaphysical Cannabis Oracle. The Truth card is about diving into the inner child years and lifting the veil at a time when someone made you feel less like yourself. The suppressed emotions of the child become the shadow work of the adult. You are good enough. Creating happy inner personalities helps manifest your joyful personal reality. All right, witches. So before we go, we do have an announcement and a half. Let's start with the half. The half announcement is that on March 1st on Wednesday, I will be releasing a tiny little audio snippet, just giving you information about the Witch Academy that we're doing in January here in New Orleans, March 1st. So I'm going to give you the URL to go to and the password to get into the website. How it'll work is you will view all the information, decide if it's something that fits you, your budget, what you're interested in, what you're all about. And if you are, you'll input your email. And then on March 15th, I will send those people who gave me their email the forms to fill out to come to New Orleans and do our fun thing. And the reason I'm doing it this way is for a numerous of reasons. One, there's like safety aspects where I just want to make sure that there are a few walls keeping us safe from like protesters and things like that. And as well as like, I don't know, I just don't want all my business out there all the time, I guess. Who can say? So that's my half announcement. My full announcement is it is giveaway time. We haven't done a giveaway in so long. We used to do giveaways all the time. I think I stopped because I was struggling with like managing the giveaways, but we have a giveaway. So Magic of Trees, the meditation we did last week. We are giving away one copy of The Magic of Trees by Jessica Marie Baumgardner. So to enter, simply email us at thewitchdailypodcast@gmail.com or use our write-in feature on our website and tell us, so tell me, like write in the email to Tanya. Tell me how connecting with nature has helped heal or assist you in your life. That's it. So you write an email, thewitchdailypodcast@gmail.com, subject, Magic of Trees, body. Hi, Tanya. I like nature because it helped me heal from maybe some trauma I had in my life. You know, just like a nice little snippet. But just know I may read your answers on air as just like, you know, a nice little uplifting moment. So if you don't want me to read your entry on air, just put a note that you don't want it read. And that's it. I just think it's nice to remind people that we can always be moving and healing and becoming whole again, you know? And then we will announce the winner on air in about a week. All right, witches. So that's it. Don't forget any books, decks, headlines, sources. Anything we've referenced today can be found in the podcast episode description or witchpod.com. And we will talk again tomorrow.
Witches, we hope you have a wonderful day, full of joy and gentleness and confidence. Links for this week's episodes, our website, Patreon, along with a free daily card pull can be found at witchpod.com. One stop for everything we talk about. Now, take one more deep breath and have a great day.
I had an abortion when I was 15 years old in my home state of Arizona in 1994. It was not a decision that I made lightly, but I have never for one moment doubted that it was the right decision for me. But so much has changed in Arizona and many other states since then. If I were that same 15-year-old in Arizona today, legally, I would have to get parental consent. I would be forced to undergo a medically unnecessary ultrasound, go to a state-mandated in-person counseling session designed solely to shame me into changing my mind, and then take a state-mandated 24-hour time out to make sure I really know what I wanted. And finally, I would be forced to give the state a reason why. Well, here is mine. It is my body, not the state's. Women and their doctors are the ones that are in the best position to make informed decisions about what is best for them. No one else. No bill that criminalizes abortion will stop anyone from making this incredibly painful decision. These bans will not stop abortion from happening, but they will drive women and girls and people into the shadows, which is what this has always been about, shaming and controlling women's bodies. In the week after I shared my story on my show, women were coming up to me in the street, in the supermarket, at my gym, with tears in their eyes, thanking me for my bravery. But the word brave didn't sit right with me. Why is it brave to speak to an experience that millions of people around the world throughout history have gone through? And then I realized it is considered brave because as women, we have been taught to feel shame about our bodies since birth. I am so sad that we have to sit here in front of a row of politicians and give deeply personal statements, because the why doesn't matter. It should not matter. I am a human being that deserves autonomy in this country that calls itself free, and choices that a human being makes about their own bodies should not be legislated by strangers who can't possibly know or understand each individual's circumstances or beliefs. I'm here today to help destigmatize a legitimate medical procedure and continue to encourage women not to allow themselves to be shamed for their choices. And finally, I am here today for my two little girls, Birdie and Cricket. My dream for them is that they will live in a world in which women are truly equal, with complete control over their own reproductive health. That is the dream I hold for all people, regardless of their privilege or parents or what state they live in. That dream is slipping further and further from reality with every ban passed. I hope that you, our elected leaders, can help us reverse the tide. Thank you. I look forward to today's discussion.